This hour, we're talking barbecue in history, folklore, restaurants, and fiction. So how's this for a premise for a novel? Owen Lerner is a pediatric psychiatrist. One day, while he's putting a quarter into a parking meter, he's struck by lightning. He survives, but things are a little different because Owen has developed a new obsession with barbecue. Mary Kay Zaravlev's the author of Man Alive. Doug Gordon sat down with her.
Mary Kay, what inspired you to write Man Alive?
Well, I had read an article in The New Yorker by Oliver Sacks about a surgeon who was struck by lightning. And this guy heard piano compositions while he was being struck. And he was not a composer. He was not a pianist. You know, he'd taken piano lessons as a kid. So he actually went on this quest to learn how to play the piano and to learn how to transcribe what he had heard so he could get that on paper. And I loved that article, but not first for a plot idea. I loved it because that's the metaphor I had always used to talk about writing, that it took me a very long time to get the music I heard in my head on paper. So then I was just, it was time to write a new book, and I sat down, I was at an art colony, and I sat down to write a short story, because that's how I sort of warm up, and I thought, oh, a pediatric psychopharmacologist is struck by lightning, and all he wants to do is barbecue. Okay. So that's how it started.
So where did this, you know, idea of being struck by lightning and becoming obsessed with barbecue come from?
I don't know. I'm from Oklahoma, so there's barbecue. There's barbecue in my subconscious. There's barbecue in my gut. That could be it. But it also, I read a lot about how kids learn and how they can't learn and what's normal and what isn't, and neurotypicals. I love the term neurotypicals. So I think that the pediatric psychopharmacologist comes from there. And then I don't know where it came from. The phrase, I just said it over and over again to myself. A pediatric psychopharmacologist is struck by lightning and all he wants to do is barbecue. It would be my mantra.
In one interview, you said that you have something of an electricity fetish. Can
you
tell me about
that? I do, actually. Sure. I say that I was raised by a tribe of electrical engineers. There are a lot of electrical engineers in my family, and their talent with circuitry and electronics does not extend to their emotional and social interactions. And I went to Rice University, which was also a place that was really talented people, not known for their social and emotional interactions. And that disconnect is fascinating to me. People who know so much but can't necessarily tell you about it or have a conversation with you. I love the idea of electricity as both mystery and completely explicable. What's the big deal? And people letting in certain things in their life without question, but then you say yoga. Ooh, not yoga.
Yeah.
And we all have those doors, right?
Right.
This is in, but this is not in. This is weird, but this is not weird. And so, you know, this book is about what's normal.
Yeah. A lot of writers will start a novel. There's a question that prompts the novel, a question that they want to wrap their brain around and explore through the course of a novel. Does that apply to you?
It's funny that you say a lot of writers, because that's exactly what I do. I'm writing to a question. So for this book, aside from my mantra, the question was, how much are you allowed to change within a family unless you don't want to be in that family anymore? So when I would say to people, oh, the premise is, and I would give them the psychopharmacologist and barbecue and ha, ha, ha. And then I would say, but really, the book is about how much can you change within a family unless you don't want to be in that family? And people would invariably go, huh. And this friend of mine said, well, you know, that's our biggest fear and our biggest hope, that we'll escape all by ourselves, but we won't be abandoned.
Yeah. Now would probably be a good time to have you read an excerpt from Man Alive.
Okay, great. The intersection of Owen's obsession and everyone else's dinner is an oasis for Tony, who undoubtedly feels October's chill more keenly than her guests. To extend the season, she totes out lap blankets and extra sweatshirts from the back of the basement closet. This can't go on forever, but she's hopeful that it doesn't have to. Meanwhile, Owen gives himself over to the fire. With the dedication he once brought to meds, he studies woods, twigs to trunks. From the strong flavors of hickory and mesquite, he moves on to the subtleties of mulberry and the delicate sweetness of alder. Wild cherry is delivered to his Bethesda backyard, followed by a truckload of red oak. No bark, only what the aficionados call the heart core. Aromatic grapevines with their curling tendrils of surprising strength and elasticity, and of course, the gnarled wood of the apple tree. When cast out of the garden, did Adam wrench a limb from the apple tree and burn it for fuel? What a poignant, bittersweet flavor that must have imparted. He goes down the same rabbit hole for meat. He's already made buddies out of the UPS and FedEx drivers who deliver his internet finds, and he gets cell phone calls from the butcher at Giant who likes to talk shop. Organic, grass-fed, and aged meat leads Owen to the Farm Women's Co-op in Bethesda and the Tacoma Park Farmers Market before he's off to the farms themselves. Soon he thinks nothing of driving to Culpeper or Emmitsburg to visit Hedge Apple, Shagbark Mountain, or Fox Hollow Farm for a lamb. The new deep freezer in the garage is packed with white bundles wrapped and labeled like presents. After meeting the right cow, he buys half of her. He likens his single-mindedness to a ball player enduring endless batting sessions, hoping to preserve the feel of a homer. Come to think of it, he doesn't have to look beyond his own circle of friends for working habits that present as crazy. Steve has been traveling to Hong Kong all year for depositions and a trial, having just come off a trial in West Virginia. What is the point of that work, which Steve despairingly describes as taking place in generic office buildings and among chain restaurants that render Hong Kong and West Virginia indistinguishable? What is the point of the 2-volume Herbert Hoover biography Betsy published when it doesn't even bring her tenure? Of course, another person might ask, what is the point of barbecue?
Excellent. So I know I asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you again, why barbecue?
Why barbecue? Well, these ideas come to you, and then as you're writing, you can't believe these ideas came to you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're free to go back and change, and you do a million times. But why barbecue? You know, as I started writing this, the idea that he was prescribing medication for people to behave normally, and the conundrum of that natural, primitive meat fire versus the kind of stuff he's doing that you've just seen here, where he's traveling 100 miles from home to get exactly the cut of oak. And when he meets the right cow, he bought half of her. I mean, he's going well out of his way on this search for a very natural meal.
Yeah. You kind of touched on it there, but I'm wondering, is there a connection to be made between lightning often causing fires and the burning involved in the creation of barbecue?
Absolutely. And that smell that he so wants. I mean, you know, his kids say to him, oh, for God's sake, that was you. You on fire, pal.
Yeah.
That's not what he wants to believe.
No. Is Owen's newfound obsession with barbecue serving as some kind of metaphor? Do you see that as a metaphor at all?
I do. And I see it as a quest, too. That which is discovered is just as valuable as that which we abandoned. And the earliest things we knew are just as treasured as what you're going to pick up tomorrow on the internet. I mean, that's constantly playing against itself. Some people will say to me, oh, is this a diatribe against medicating children? It isn't.
Uh-huh.
It's a question of what the hell is normal. And I'm constantly juxtaposing these two things. You know, we test our children. There's a running thread through the book of these SAT vocabulary tests, right? The twin brothers are teasing or teaching their younger sister words for the SAT vocab. And they're never words that you use in conversation. So isn't that kind of hilarious that we're testing our children's language ability using words that are never used in conversation? That's normal.
Yeah.
And asking kids to sit still for hours and hours a day. And now finding medicine or coping mechanisms so they can do that. That's normal.
Yeah. And one of the things I found interesting is the way that the lightning strike changes Owen. He becomes more like his kids, the children he works with who have Asperger's syndrome and other kinds of autism. And I'm curious, was that something you had in mind when you first conceived of the character of Owen Lerner, or did that develop as you were writing the book?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is the distinction between like a short story, which I thought I was writing, and a novel. So, you know, the premise just came to me, and then I started playing with it. I wrote the scene where he's struck by lightning just out of my imagination. And then I started doing a little research to make sure that I'm somewhat on the mark. And when I realized that people who aren't killed by lightning have exactly the symptoms that he has been treating for 25 years, I thought, oh, this is not a short story. This is a novel. So that was a huge leap.
Yeah.
That this is what he is a specialist in: impulse control, post-traumatic stress, Asperger-like symptoms. That's what he's been talking about for his whole life.
Uh-huh.
And he's the go-to guy for that, you know, medical concoction, which for some children is essential.
One little minor detail I wanted to ask you about happens just after Owen has been struck by lightning. One of the twins, his son Ricky, is administering CPR. to Owen, and Ricky recites barbecue spare ribs, between breaths as kind of a timing mechanism. Is that a real thing, or did you make that up?
I made that up.
Okay. It should be a real thing, and maybe it will be now. That was great.
It's like one Mississippi, right? It's just the right number of syllables.
Yeah. I've read that there was a line that you'd been carrying around for a while and that you ended up using it in the book. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So there's a British sociologist named Adam Phillips who writes a lot. He's very prolific. And I was reading an article of his one day about families coping with a member of the family who has Asperger's. And his line was, "The secret to family life is to not take it personally." And I mean, I thought my head was going to explode because I just thought that is the perfect piece of advice an outsider can give to someone in a family who cannot take that advice. It's impossible to take, even though it's actually good advice. You know, why can't this child sit through Thanksgiving dinner with 20 people and food, the texture of which is upsetting and there's all this noise going on? Why can't he? He cannot. And it's not something personal. Meanwhile, when you're in the family, you cannot abide by that. So then I thought, oh, this will be great. I'll put Owen in the situation of having to take his own advice, and we'll see how that goes.
Mary Kay Zurovlev. Her novel is called Man Alive. She talked with Doug Gordon.